हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 95, Sutra 2.3.33. Upadanat, because of taking. The jiva is the agent because he is so described in the scriptures. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar quotes scriptural injunctions to prove the jiva to be the agent by means of prana in the attainment of results. Siddhanta. Shri Govindabhasi. In the Shruti it is said, Sa yata maharaja evam evaisha etan pranan grihitva sve sharire yata kama parivartate. Like a king moves with his subjects in his kingdom, the Atma, taking the pranas with him, moves about in his body. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 2.1.18. Shariram yad avapnoti yachchap yukra matishvara grihit vainan samyati vayur gandhan ivashayat. Whenever the jiva accepts or leaves a body, he takes these senses with him in the subtle body, just as air takes fragrances from objects and goes elsewhere. Bhagavad Gita 15.8. These texts indicate that the jiva is the agent, and the pranas are used by him. The conscious jiva is the agent, just as a magnet is the agent that draws iron. In grasping objects, the pranas and senses are the cause, but none other than the jiva is the grasper of the prana. Okay, so you're trying to establish this principle. It means we're dealing with the soul, the material energy, and the Lord. Right? What's their position? What's their relationship? Right? So the difficulty comes up is that since the Lord's potencies are inconceivable, right? There's a difficulty in mundane reasoning appreciating that, right? So it's beyond reasoning, but at the same time, as reasoning is not dissatisfied, because it's logical that God has inconceivable potencies, right? We're talking about God, that's just the way he is. But the difficulty comes up is that not being able to understand what's temporary and what's eternal, not being able to appreciate what's, you know, these differences and the difference and non-difference with the Lord, then one comes under illusion. Right? So it's an unfortunate state, because by pride we think our mundane intelligence will allow us to understand anything we want. That's a, you know, it's just like we want to control everything we want, enjoy anything we want. So we have the idea, I can understand anything we want. You know, I mean, it's not everybody has that problem, but some people, that's their issue, right? I'm so smart, I understand everything. Right? So that becomes the difficulty, is that the living entity, without devotion, cannot understand this, because being inconceivable, being beyond, being in control of the Lord, only the Lord can reveal this. Right? That's the position. So, all these varieties of ways that the illusion can come up means what is the position of God and the position of the living entity, the position of the material world, and then what is their relationship, right? All this sambandha gyan, then there's a problem, right? Because only in devotion can you understand things as they are. Without devotion, it cannot be understood. It's not because, oh, they're so intelligent, they'll understand. It has nothing to do with intelligence. Right? We're taking it that material intelligence means they can understand unlimited, but it can't. Right? The experience of unlimited is happening not because of the intelligence, it's happening in the position of the mind, in the consciousness. Right? That's where one is appreciating unlimited. But the intelligence can't grasp it because it's material. Right? So because of this, then all the problem comes up. Right? Just like someone has a little money, he thinks he can buy anything. But he can't. Does that make sense? Yes.
It says here that when the jiva leaves the body, he takes the senses with him. Are we talking about what? Which senses?
Right. You have a variety of senses that you're...
I don't want to take them.
But then next body you won't have them. So that's why you have to take them with you. It's like when you go traveling, if you don't take food with you, there's nothing to eat.
I always had another idea.
The senses go with you. But the point is the particular form of that sense, that's gained with the body.
We always say that the subtle body goes with
it. Yeah, but the point is senses are part of that. Because the sense objects, all that tan matras, all these things, these are subtle stuff.
And what's the gross then?
The gross is the particular hands you have. But hands do hand stuff. You go like this, cat has a hand, it goes like this, monkey goes like this, elephant goes like this. You understand? That's the gross manifestation. Just like you're cooking. But you cook, it can manifest through the particular pot that you're using. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So depending upon the pot, let's say you go in the kitchen, you want to deep fry something, but all you have is a frying pan. It'll work, but it's slightly different. Right? But the principle of frying is happening. So the sense has that subtle aspect.
Just my question is, those particular senses we have now, they're suitable for what we have now from the previous.
No, but you're talking about the gross manifestation of that sense.
I'm trying to understand what's subtle about it.
Subtle about it is that you can see. What you see through. We have these eyes, we see certain things. Animals have different eyes, they see different things.
So we're talking about the general thing and then the specific we get?
Yeah, it's just like the mind. There's the principle of mind and then there's the quality of how it manifests.
Because when
by karma, it may be better or worse or this or that. You know, just like the body. Someone does pious activities, they get a heavenly body, it's a better quality. Or they perform sinful activities, they get, you know, they end up as Gollum or something, you know.
And I'm saying that when we carry our specific mind to the next body,
yes,
made of our impressions, of our desires.
But it still has to be manifest.
Yeah, so
through the gross body. So the senses are also there, but it has to be manifest through the gross body. Just like... Yeah. No, so it's a whole package. But when we say mind, intelligence, false ego, that's enough because then the senses, all that, they all expand out of these elements. But they're the subtle forms of it. Remember, when an element manifests, it also has the particular sense that goes with it. You know, so with the ether comes sound, right? And the ability to hear. And that's what goes with us. This particular ear that we have, that's not the one that goes with us. Right? You know, it's just like the same ear. We hear one thing, someone else can hear things that we can't hear. You know, like that. Or we see something we can't see. Because it's not just that you see, it's also how you're appreciating it and everything like that. Is that, yeah. So you're dealing with this the whole subtle arrangement, the subtle situation of the living entity. That's what goes with them. And then that's, depending upon the karma, that's what then manifests the particular gross body in the next life. Right? So that's why when we work with spiritual senses, like that, we only see things connected to Krishna. Then we get a body that has that for manifesting the spiritual senses. Just like in this body, we can use the spiritual mind and intelligence. It's just we generally don't tend to. Right? If you decide, no, I'm going to, you know, behave in this way and do this for Krishna, that's your spiritual intelligence in mind. Does that make sense? So the soul at all times is situated in a liberated position. That's their position. But by consciousness, then we're conditioned. Right? Because the conditioning means that we're accepting things not connected to the Lord. We're not understanding the philosophy. Achinta, beta, beta, tattva. We're not seeing like that. So because of that, then all these difficulties come up. So all those variety of ways that you can misjudge all these aspects, and then how they all are related to each other, and whether the goals, that, then that's dealt with in Vedanta Sutra. Like that. But you see, it's because you are dealing with material intelligence, then it's going through in this very logical kind of way. Right? Very technical way. While we see Bhagavatam deals with it in a very much more, you know, how you say, for us, accessible. You know, because it's just straight dealing with the devotional side. Because if you have the devotional, the material side's taken care of.
So, yeah. We perform so many activities simply, like we just to pick up a pen, but then even behind this particular activity we have the senses, then you have the prana, then you have the jiva, then you have this desire to do a particular thing.
Right.
So though it looks simple, it's actually, you know, the mechanics is it like quite chained, you know.
No, it's a whole thing. Because in there, as we're saying, with the pranas, that then the pranas are pushing on the fire, and the fire is pushing on, therefore, on the you know, through the nerves, and the nerves push on the muscle, and the muscle then picks up the.
So then the demigods are involved at every stage, wherever, like.
Yeah, they do. That's why it takes 33 million of them. Right? And then the result is you pick up your pen. So that's the whole thing. Krishna is doing everything. And so we were saying before, Krishna is everything. So it's all going on. Now it's just a matter of, do we see the relationship here? So now, most of the time, what we're always discussing here, this is probably one of the major differences you could see in the Vedanta Sutras. You're discussing the position of the jivas, right? The position of the jivas, the position of the Lord, position of the material energy. Because that it is not understood in that particular relationship. But now, in the next point, is once that's appreciated, then one can apply it practically. So practical means now what's your relationship with the material energy? Right? So our relationship is Yukta Vairagya. That's where Yukta Vairagya comes in. So when you understand who you are, what's eternal and what's temporary, and you understand the material energy, what's eternal and what's temporary, then you can use Yukta Vairagya. Otherwise, it's just a politically correct term just to use to get away with any damn nonsense you want to just because you feel like it. Right? So to avoid that, then Yukta Vairagya means that you actually understand, because yukta means it's connected to the Lord. In other words, the eternal aspect of the soul and the eternal aspect of the material energy, that you're then connecting to the Supreme Eternal. Right? And in doing that, it's not that you're just doing that, because anybody who knows the Vedic culture and that, the great sages and the great, they're doing that part. But now what's the next part? How it makes it pure devotion. Right? No karma, no jnana. Does that make sense? That's the Vairagya. That's Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya is an essential point, is the practical application of Achinta Bheda Veda Tattva. That's what you're dealing with. Right? Because if we're saying, I'm not this body, yes, you're not the body, you're the soul. Right? So what should the soul in this situation do? But that's not what's being considered. It's I'm not this body, and the body is being controlled by rules. So since I'm not the body, I don't have to follow the rules. If you look at that scientifically, is that Yukta Vairagya? Or is that just cheating, trying to avoid rules? So in other words, I'm the controller and enjoyer, so I can do whatever I like. But when it's about Krishna, then he's the supreme eternal. We're eternal. The material energy is eternal. Right? And so we function within that sphere. Then that means then it's connected to the Lord. It has that yoga. So that's yukta. Right? And we're doing that not for any benefit we'll get. So I'm not the controller. It's connected to Krishna. And it's not for my benefit. So therefore, it's for Krishna's pleasure. That's the Vairagya. Right? Then it becomes connected. So this is then what it is. But one has to understand what's eternal and what's temporary. So the manifestation of the body and the manifestation of the material energy, that's temporary. But the principles on which they function and that potency of the Lord that makes them function, that's eternal. So then we catch that, the essential point, the primary, and connect that to Krishna. Because that is Krishna. Right? So those principles that make it function, that's Krishna. Then the particular manifestation of that function, that's his energy. Does that make sense? You like the table. That the table holds things off the floor, that's Krishna. That's the eternal principle of a table. That particular table that you have there is made out of wood, or it's made out of plastic, or it's made out of a combination of things. That's the temporary. But the principle of what a table does, that's Krishna. So now, so the point is we're interacting with Krishna's energy as that table, that particular manifestation. But the point is we have to deal with it according to Krishna's nature. Right? His nature, and then the nature of his energy. So if it's glass table, you deal with it one way. If it's a wood table, you deal in another way. Does that make sense? So that's what one has to see, is that all these considerations are there. So if one's not a devotee, then there's going to be mistakes on all levels of this. For the devotee, then they know what is the proper, and then they can act in the proper way. That's why they're transcendental. And that's why the jnanis and that, they'll claim to be transcendental, and we'll categorize them because they're working in that field, but we won't actually call them transcendental. We'll call them transcendentalists, but they're not actually. Because they're not transcendental to the material energy, to the mahatattva, right? Because what's that principle of mahatattva, right? Is an aspect of sutra, that they want to control and enjoy it. Right? So they use their intelligence to control, and their enjoyment's going to be the negativity of getting free from it. Right? That's why you see sometimes the intellectuals, they're so snarky. Right? Because it's all about negativity, getting rid of things until there's nothing left. Right? Does that make sense? They would get rid of the students, but if they did, then they wouldn't get paid. So therefore, they tolerate them enough, so therefore they're only snarky, not downright nasty.
It's so common today. If you want to be in class, otherwise I don't bother. Even if no one is there, I come to the class, just spend time and go away.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you spent a little time, you waited a little bit, no one came. You spent around, you did a little bit of work, 5-10 minutes, then you leave, and then you're good, you get paid, right? Yeah.
Why don't you? this entire explanation of Yukta Vairagya that we gave just now. So can we say that this particular Jnana Yoga is very important in Vaidisadhana Bhakti so that we progress?
Is Jnana Yoga important in Vaidisadhana Bhakti? It's useful as a tool. We always have to remember karma and jnana are useful as tools, but they're not actually the process. So we're not following the process of karma or following the process of jnana. We're following the process of bhakti. Within that, the tools we use are karma and jnana and jnana. We use those. But it's not that they're what makes it work. It's bhakti makes it work. Bhakti makes them work. It's not the other way around. Bhakti is always independent. Yes.
I think in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami mentions that they are both useful until their spontaneous love is vacant. And then it's like...
They're not useful because it's not that you're not performing activities and it's not that you're not using intelligence in Rag Bhakti. It's just that it doesn't... It's not that... It's not a calculation. So when we say karma yoga, means we're calculating this activity, its connection to Krishna. Right? So it's that we're here, we have a situation, and then we're trying to use that situation connected to Krishna. So it's going through those stages. So that's why it's called Vaidhi, because we're following the rules of it. My position, the situation, what are the things you can gain from that offering to Krishna. So it's devotional service, but it's in Vaidhi. Rag means you just see a natural position to do something for Krishna and just do that. So it's not about that it's karma and there's no intellectual process in between. That's the whole point. But the elements of that, you'll see that the essence of that, they're using. So you'll see they'll be the perfect karma yogis or perfect jnana yogis. But it's not that it means anything to them. You know, it's just like, let's say, let's say you want to do a difficult yoga asana. Right? You have to think about it. Right? You know, about the thing, about the particular pose, about what muscles are involved, relaxing those specific muscles, doing the whole thing, getting the prana to work, breathing from the stomach, all that kind of stuff. Right? Now, babies, they could do that asana, you know, they don't even think. They only breathe from the stomach. They only do that. They're only relaxed. That's the difference.
Dogs also.
Yeah, dogs. Yeah, just there. Yeah, well, that's why it's called downward dog. Is it? Yeah, they do it all the time. You know? Every time they get up, they do that. You know? Right? That's why it's got that name, because that's what dogs do. That's their claim to fame, is that yoga song. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're talking about. The difference. It's the mistake is made that this rag bhakti is something else. I don't have to follow the rules. Therefore, I can whimsically do whatever I want. No, it's that I don't have to follow the rules. I just do what Krishna wants. That's the whole thing. So when it comes down to Krishna, so here the gopis, you're going out to dance with Krishna, or you stay at home and you know serve dinner to the family. So that is a rule that's what you do. But it's also the highest rule is serving Krishna. So therefore you'll see something, if it works, it does. Just like you see when they're there during the day, there is no opportunity to go out to serve Krishna directly like that. Then all those services in the house and that, they see that connected to Krishna. They see their family members, the potency that is there, that makes them function in that way. Why the husbands act as husbands, children as children, you know, how you say, other members of the family in those particular capacities. That's the potency of Krishna. So then they're just serving Krishna. So if they're serving lunch to the family, they're just seeing that they're serving Krishna. Right? Through that medium. So that's the thing, is they know what's the eternal and what's the temporary. So if you boil it down, the philosophy is actually very simple and straightforward. The only problem is since we have unlimited lifetimes of not doing that, then there's a few little, points of contention that we need to clear up in the detail. So that's why then it goes so much here. Because when they're saying he's not the agent at all, meaning he's not doing anything, material energy is controlling everything, then we have to say, no, he's the agent, because he's the one that gets the karma, not material energy. Right? Means when material energy runs you over with a bus, she doesn't get a reaction. Right? That's all. That's the point. It's that we get the reaction because we think we're the doer. But when it comes down to it, ultimately, we're not the doer. So all these Vedic philosophies, they're rooted in something connected with the Veda, with the Upanishads. But because of lack of devotion, they can't understand it in its proper context. So they take it out of context and come up with some weird philosophies. Is that okay? Yeah. You had something?
You answered my question.
Okay.
You were speaking.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference.
By practicing Vaidisadhana Bhakti also, devotees experience that they have raag for some specific services and not for the others.
Yes.
Is it that there's a progression then in that sense?
It means if you have raag in one area and not in another. Yeah, it's just a matter, because when we say raag, it means it's prominent.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? If it's not prominent, then it's not raag. You know, but if we have to intellectualize on it, you know, that something is here and that, so Radha and Krishna are here, and so this and that, and so then I should meditate like this and do that, that's Vaidhi. Even though it may be the Vaidhi of Radha Kund, but it's Vaidhi Bhakti. And whether it's Bhakti is another thing, but it's Vaidhi. Rag happens spontaneously. Right? Like that. So, but it's in connection to Krishna. Not, we have rag when it comes to material things. Like we're sitting there, it's japa time, we're half falling asleep, we're hungry, we're this and that, and somebody pulls out a samosa. There's rag. Natural, spontaneous attraction. Right? You know, we fully wake up, the senses are alive, and the intelligence is working and all that. We're already figuring out, well, I'm sitting right here, I can't eat here. Where could I go? Okay, we could go there if we go up the stairs here. Then that, but it's by the pujari room. But if we keep on going, then that, we could go down the stairs the other side that goes the out. But that, so you want to go down just enough that people can't see you, but not too much that you're outside. You know, and all that's all working. Right? So it's just happening. You don't have to do. That's wrong. Unfortunately, it's mundane. But it's connected to Krishna. Right? Because the samosa is Mahaprasad and all this. So that, therefore, we're purified. But it's not prominent. Other than that bucket of halava, then there isn't a whole lot of things that the brahmacharis are spontaneous with. Does that make sense? Yeah, so everybody has their area. Somebody likes a kirtan, someone likes a japa, someone likes darshan, someone likes festivals, someone like that. So when we talk about devotional service, the shraddha, the prema, these aspects that are there, that attraction and all those things, those are there all the way through. Otherwise, why you're taking up the process? There's a taste. But the point is you only get that taste at that one point in that little bit. But because it's greater than anything that the material world has to offer, therefore it stands out in the consciousness. But it's not enough that we would call it ruchi. Ruchi means that's what is the prominent thing in the consciousness, is that taste in Krishna consciousness.
Can you say that there is some connection between the varna, the nature of a person, and rag?
Is there a connection between the varna, the person, and the rag? Absolutely not. Nothing. These are just other tricks. That if one is Brahmin, then one is naturally this, one is this and that. And I think it was one devotee, he bumped into some Radha Kund Babaji's, and they gave him a Siddha Pranali, but because he's a Westerner, he can't be anything of elevated and all that, so they told him he was a peacock. Like that. So that was pretty standard back in those days. Now it's probably not selling so well, so they're upgrading the thing. You know, they know too much, right? So... But otherwise it was there. So one day one devotee comes into the room, and this devotee is there, and he's kind of bent over and going like this, you know, with his arms. And he sees him, what are you doing? And he looked at him and said, you know, with that kind of, you know, clever thing, if only you know. If only you knew, right? And he's a peacock. And, yeah, so this kind of nonsense has nothing to do with anything. Means technically, it means this following the Vedic culture, and that will be easier for a Brahmin. Just because of the mode of goodness, the natural thing. Means Brahmin, someone who has the quality. But as far as devotion goes, it's not limited by the, it's the soul that takes up devotion, not the body. Bhagavatam verse reverence. Srimad Bhagavatam 7245. In the body, the most important substance is the life air. But that also is neither the listener nor the speaker. Beyond even the life air, the soul also can do nothing. For the supersoul is actually the director, in cooperation with the individual soul. The supersoul conducting the activities of the body is different from the body and living force. So Krishna ultimately is conducting everything, but he's different from that. Therefore, Ichinta Veda Veda Tattva. It's his energies. His energies transform under his direction. The living entity identifies with it, and so therefore, then they're called the doer. But in actuality, they're not the doer either. Neither material nature nor the living entity are the doer. It's the Lord. But he's beyond this, so he also is not the doer. So then what's the consideration? It's the desire of the living entity. What the living entity wants, that's then what's dealt with. Right? So the Lord arranges that. And it's according to, you know, karma means what you deserve. Does that make sense? That's how. Srila Prabhupada comments. The Supreme Personality of Godhead distinctly says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishto Matas Mitir Gyanam.
It's Gyanam.
Okay. What's that? Jishyanam. Okay. Apohanam Cha. I am seated in everyone's heart. And from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. End quote. Although the Atma, or soul, is present in every material body, Dehi nosmin yata dehe, Bhagavad Gita 2:13, he is not actually the chief person acting through the senses, mind, and so on. The soul can merely act in cooperation with the supersoul, because it is the supersoul who gives him directions to act or not to act. Matas smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Right? So you see here, Prabhupada quotes it twice in one paragraph. Right? From different angles. Right? One is the living entity, one is the Lord. Right? One cannot act without his sanction. For the supersoul is upadrashta and anumanta, the witness and sanctioner. One who studies carefully under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master can understand the real knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the conductor of all the activities of the individual soul and the controller of their results as well. Right, so here's the key point is that direction. So he said this is philosophy is there, but how does one know that? From studying under the bona fide spiritual master, right, in the association of devotees. Right? So that's what's going to make the process work. Right? Because with Krishna, one is serving in the association of devotees. Right? So then one can know that Krishna is the witness, he's the sanctioner. Same time as he controls the activities, he controls the results. And he is the situation. So that's what we mean. He is everything. But the jiva is there, then they want to act. So here we're making a distinction, right? As soon as we bring this in, rasa goes away, right? We bring in these technical points of who's doing what, the rasa goes away. And that's what we want, because in the material platform, then the rasa is what? Right? Mundane. So that's the whole point. That natural mundane rag that we have, that attachment to the mundane, that has to go away. So by this jnana yoga, you remove that. Right? But coming to the spiritual platform, since it's in connection with Krishna and everything's going how it's supposed to go, there's no need of using this. That's why the jnana stops at that point. It's not that they don't use intelligence. It's not that they don't use activities. It's just not based on that position of good work gets good results, and so I get benefit, or the knowledge then frees me from material entanglement. They don't need that anymore on the liberated platform. The devotees don't require it. So therefore, it's just about pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? No? Kind of, yes.
The difficulty with some devotees seems to be is that they actually, by this process, destroyed the material rasa or attachment as such.
Yes, but they still situate themselves in that, trying to get the benefit.
Yes, because the spiritual rasa isn't there yet. It's not developed.
Yes.
So it's like in between.
Yes, but that's why we use bhakti as opposed to just jnana or karma. See, is that in bhakti you're engaging karma yoga and jnana yoga, but they're not actually prominent. They're aspects of bhakti. Mm-hmm. But if you see that we are there more prominent, then you'll see the weaknesses of both of them will be there. So if it's jnana, there'll be too much material interest and desire to enjoy, and you know, politics and economics and all social position and prestige and all that. And from jnana, then it'll be that they don't care about anything, and they're, you know, they have not nice things to say about anybody and everyone at all times, all places, all circumstances. You know, just like the fourth verse of Chatur Shloki. Right?
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty, is that when they become too prominent, then you'll see that. But if you're doing that in connection with Krishna, they'll get purified. They'll advance in devotional service. But in the area that they're functioning in, there'll be weaknesses. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so in other words, they will lose the facility by that use of jnana.
Right.
So they could use that for Krishna, but they're not, because they can't see its connection to Krishna. Right? They're so smart, they can't see what they're dealing with. Right? I think the saying, you can't see the nose on your face, or, you know, like that. It's just, yeah. So, they have to be very careful of that, because the problem is they think they're advancing, but the point is advancement means is you don't see it as sense gratification in the first place. So if you can only see the object as sense gratification, then giving up that object is a step forward in Krishna consciousness, because it means if you're doing that for Krishna, if you're doing that for liberation, of course, that's going to be a distraction. But if you're doing that for Krishna, then it is a step forward. But with time, then you start to see is that it's not an object of sense gratification, but it's an object that can be engaged as pleasure for Krishna. Right? Now we're dealing with advanced devotional service. So the difficulty when we define that, oh, in the early days, you know, everything was rough and this and that, all it is that they were sincerely trying to be Krishna conscious, but because of the attachment to sense gratification and jnana, like this, then they would reject all these things that could be used for Krishna, but they weren't able to use them for Krishna, so their rejection of that was their service to Krishna. And so there's roughness and all that, then it's you know, it's seen like that. So now it should be, as you advance, then it becomes softened by, now you don't see it as sense gratification, so you can work with it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that would be the natural form. But since you're dealing with those things externally, though it's for Krishna, then if we stop dealing with them externally, and we don't know how they connect to Krishna, then we'll just take up the mundane again. So the so-called contemporary softness is just the acceptance of mundanity, that it's okay. It's not that it's for Krishna. And if you say, well, it's for Krishna, then we'll say, oh, that's fanatic. So therefore, being materially absorbed is just normal. And yes, every living entity is doing it. We want to fit in, right? We want to be part of the scene, don't want to stand out. Yeah, so we're just mundane like everybody else. And it works. It sounds nice as a philosophy, but it's absolutely no philosophy at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in other words, they progress up to a particular point, and then one stops progressing. at least in that area. Maybe other areas, you know, trying to be nice to people and this and that. But the being nice is not based on that all living entities are the soul and part and parcel of Krishna. Otherwise, how do you get eternal damnation? Right? It's a matter of someone's doing something that's not favorable in devotional service, so the whole point is to give that up. And as soon as you've given it up, now everything's proper. But if having given it up is still not proper, then you're seeing things, you're giving the gross and subtle coverings of the soul as the identification of the soul. So you're actually seeing that this political correct philosophy is actually in the mode of passion and ignorance. It's not goodness at all. It's being presented as if it is, because it has, you're following externals of the mode of goodness, but your purpose is not the mode of goodness at all. It's all for political and economic and judicial reasons. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's not that there's an improvement on that platform, just of what the area of what we're talking. It's a matter of improvement means you don't see it as sense gratification anymore. That's when now you can work with it. So that's the idea. The brahmachari training means you'll see it as sense gratification. You just separate yourself from it. And then by that, you get engaged in direct activities, devotional service that you can see in that way. Then, seeing like that, then you go back into the social environment that you don't see things for sense gratification. Now you can function within the society, either as a brahmachari or as a grihastha. Does that make sense? So that's the system. Yeah.
The desire of the living entity happens before Krishna sanctions any actions.
Yes. So, I mean, why sanction action that the living entity is not interested in?
So does that make the desire of the living entity dependent or independent of Krishna?
Means you want to fulfill the desire. Who's going to fulfill it? Krishna. But at the same time, is you can independently have that desire, but to fulfill it, it's still Krishna. So the living entity is conscious, is an individual, just like Krishna is conscious and an individual. Therefore, his parts and parcels are also conscious and individual. But the point is being energy, we're dependent upon him. So, yeah. So that's the point of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. The two go together. If we have to have as though it's this or that, then we'll never understand. When we can understand they can both happen simultaneously, that's when it moves forward. Does that work? Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas or senses, he is not actually the proprietor, for the proprietor is the supersoul. Consequently, the supersoul is called Hrishikesha, and the individual soul is advised by the direction of the supersoul to surrender to him and thus be happy. Sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Thus he can be immortal and transferred to the spiritual kingdom, where he will achieve the highest success of an eternal blissful life of knowledge. In conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body, senses, living forth, and the airs within the body. And above him is the supersoul, who gives the individual soul all facilities. The individual soul who renders everything to the supersoul lives very happily within the body. But so, if you're connected to Krishna, then it's comfortable in the because it's Krishna's arrangement. And so it'll go nicely. But that comfort is in that comfort of connected to Krishna. You're not really focused on what's happening. You're just doing your service, but if you think about it, it'll go, it was comfortable. But when we're thinking, I want to be comfortable, that's when, then it's according to your karma. But if you just deal in Krishna, you'll see, if you look back, it was comfortable. Even the Pandavas in the forest, was it comfortable or not? They had nothing, but they were comfortable. They had each other, they were surrounded by all kinds of great sages and all that. You know, they by Krishna's arrangement, now they had that Akshay Patra, you know, so whatever they cooked, then they could unlimitedly distribute to all the Brahmins. You know, so it was fine. Life was comfortable. But if you look back, it was comfortable. But you look at the situation, you may think it's not, but it worked. Okay, so. Also here, different from the body, okay, that's the gross. Now the senses, life force, and the airs within the body, that's all what goes with the living entity. So also the life force goes with the living entity. So it's a whole package. Right? So that's why then, because it goes, that's why then when they go down to the, let's say, the hellish planets, then they can cover with a special body that allows you, you know, that is this body, if you toss it off a mountain down onto a bunch of rocks and all that, it falls apart like that. But that particular covering, that kind of special body that they put on the soul when you go to the hellish regions, then it doesn't fall apart. Or it falls apart enough to that you get the experience, and then they come and put you back together and take you back up the mountain again. You know what I'm saying? So the senses, the life force, that all goes along. Like that. All that's left is the gross body. Everything else goes with you.
Right. Those cartoon designers, they probably went to those hellish planets.
Yes, yes. Like that. Yes, yes. That's the whole thing. Is that we're thinking it's funny, but it's a hellish situation, right? Right? You can imagine that, you know, falling 2,000 feet. So it makes a hole in the ground, the shape of your body, and then you crawl out a little bedraggled and then start all over again. Yeah. Yeah. Yes? No? Looney Tunes? No? Okay. So Sutra 2334. Another reason is given. Vyapade satcha kriyayam na chain near desha. Viparyaya, vyaparesha, because of designation, cha, and, kriyayam, in action, na, not, che, it, nirdesha, grammatical construction, viparyaya, different. The jiva is an agent because he is designated as such in actions. If it were not so, the sentence would be constructed differently. Right? So grammatically they put together the sentence of the Upanishad if it was meaning something else. They would use a different grammatical arrangement. But because they've used a particular grammatical arrangement, then it means that he's designated as the doer in the actions. Not that he's the one who's actually doing the action, but he's the one who's identifying and wants it to be done. So because he wants it to be done, he gets the results. Is that my thing? Sutra Prakashita. The Sutrakar makes clear that the jiva is an agent and uses his intelligence as a tool for accomplishing his task. This equates the jiva with the tool, namely the intelligence. Hence, the terms jiva and intelligence are used by the scriptures interchangeably. Nonetheless, when the Shastras mention that the jiva is not the agent, it simply indicates he has no independence. So you have to know how the definitions work. Just like when we say the material energy is illusion, we simply means because the manifestations are temporary. Right? So when we're dealing with the eternal, the Lord, and the soul, then the manifestations of the material energy being temporary, therefore they're called illusion. Right? That's what the illusion means. And the living entity identifies with them. So as soon as you don't identify with them and you see them in connection with Krishna, there is no illusion. Though you're still dealing with the temporary. It doesn't give a temporary result. It gives an eternal result. Eternal meaning the devotional. Not that you put one piece of toast in the toaster and you did it in a Christian conscious way. Now you get unlimited millions of pieces of toast out of that with one effort. No, it doesn't mean that. So, Sri Govinda Bhashya, Siddhanta. Vijnanam yajnayam tanute. The intelligence, jiva, performs sacrifice. Taittu Upanishad 2.5. The jiva is the agent because of this teaching. With the jiva as the chief agent in actions, both Vedic and secular. If the word vijnanam did not mean the jiva, but rather the intelligence, it would be stated differently. Right? So even here, he's mentioning Vedic and secular. Is that you have the Vedic means what the rules are applying to and all that, and then the secular just simply means the application of the law. You know, the general application. Does that make sense? Like that. So, like when, let's say, the Veda describes a preparation, it just mentions the general concept of it. Right? Then you have the science, the art of it. The science that's given, and the Veda that gives something more. But then there'll be the thing, how you're pushing the spoon around. That's the secular. You understand? So even in the Vedic, there's the concept of secular. But the point is that the secular has no meaning without its basis on the Vedic. Yes?
Secular means, like, according to the region, what is the convenient aspect and how they do things? Is it like that?
Yeah, basically. But you also see is this, there's just general that just works. But we know that it works like that because of behind that it is the, you know, the modes of nature and all that. So we can take everything back. So that's why generally we talk about what he's meaning here is he's the agent both in the Vedic things and when he's not the Vedic things. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The word vijnanam did not mean the jiva, but rather the intelligence, it would be stated differently. Vijnanam is in the nominative case to indicate the agent. The instrumental cause would be used to indicate intelligence, since it's merely an instrument of action. But the senses are not constructed in this manner. Moreover, if intelligence were the agent, one would have to imagine another instrument of action, since one sees that actions are carried out with instruments. Thus, the dispute in name is in name only, because in this case one accepts the agent as identical with the instrument. Right? Because you're just doing it here. You're saying, who's cooking? Right? You'll say the person. Right? But what is cooking? Right? Cooking is where you, in a controlled way, apply heat, you know, to something that, you know, supposedly is edible. You know, or can be made edible. Right? Does that make sense? But now, is the agent, is the actual person themselves, are they applying, are they putting the heat? Are they touching the heat? Are they? No. So all the pots, the pans, the fires, all these are the agents. So like the intelligence. So when it says the cook did this, it means there. So if you say, you know, yes, with the pots and pans, the lunch was cooked. But what does that mean? It means there's a cook. So all you're pointing out is bringing out the aspect of the intelligence as its feature in the process. As opposed to, let's say, the action. In other places, it'll be pointing out the piety, the consideration of the rules. Right? But here it's pointing out the intellectual aspect. But because of the nature of the grammar, then we understand it's referring to the person who's using intelligence. Does that make sense? So that's why one has to, you know, see what's going on. So you're saying just by the logical point, then you can see it's by just by grammar it means this. Footnote 58. The jiva as agent, being intelligent, uses his intelligence to perform his actions. His Holiness Bhanaswami. Quote, if the jiva were an agent, its creations would be beneficial for itself and not unbeneficial for itself, since it is an independent agent. End quote. That is not so, right? Because they're saying if he was an agent, he'd be doing everything for his benefit. Why would he do something not for his benefit? That'll be the argument in saying he's the agent. Because the thing is who are we arguing with here? We're not arguing with smartas who want to go to the heavenly planets. Right? We're arguing here with the impersonalists who are then are saying that the soul is not involved. The soul doesn't exist. Right? So the point is that the being merely entangled is not beneficial to the soul. So they're saying therefore the soul wouldn't do that. But that's not the point. Though the jiva desires to produce something beneficial, sometimes he performs unbeneficial acts because of various karmas accompanying him. Therefore, it can be concluded that the jiva is an agent. That being so, when the scriptures talk of the jiva not being an agent, it simply means that the jiva is not independent in his actions. That's what it means there. Because the point is that if you have a relationship, it's important about what you're doing, not what are the mechanics behind it. Does that make sense? It's just like, let us say, okay, some nice arrangement's been made. Right? Let's say it's the... for the couple, it's their anniversary. Husband has made some nice arrangements and all that. You know, really worked at it, right? Right, we're taking a hypothetical situation here.
Yeah, that
you
even remember.
Yeah, it's the first thing you remember. He remembered and he made some serious effort. Yeah, that's what I said. Hypothetical. Yeah, think Arjuna. Yudhishthira. Yeah. Yeah, you know, all the Wallas in the sixth canto, Priyavrata, Rishabdev, yeah. Yeah. Back to our example. Trying to get back. Okay, yes. Then it's there. Wife walks in. She's impressed. She's very happy and all this. And so now, if he just goes with that happiness and that, everything will go fine. But now, if he really wants to point out that, yes, you know, we worked so hard and we did this and we had to call that guy and that guy didn't respond and this and that, and he goes into this whole thing on the technicalities of the instruments, how will that be appreciated? Right? Yeah, it'll all be lost. Right, so. No? Yes. So, that's the whole point, he's not independent. So we're only pointing that out, because if you get rid of the aspect of being an agent, you'll lose rasa. So, we only use it, pushing it in the aspect to get rid of material rasa, that concept. But as soon as we bring it around to, we're doing things to please Krishna, then we don't have to separate so much. Like we'll say, oh yes, this devotee did this nice service. Right? Because we're appreciating the devotion that they applied. Now, if in doing that, then someone else goes, yeah, but they're not the agent and all that. It's just, you know, all these instruments of the modes, the prana, life force and all that. And Krishna's there and he's the, you know, whatever it was, Anumanta and Upadrashta and all this and that. So why are you giving him so much credit? Right? In other words, find new friends. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that when it's in connection with Krishna, it doesn't, then you give all that credit. They are the agent. And if they're in Maya, because they identify with it, then they're the agent. But if you're trying to separate from one to the other, that in between, that's when this is used. Does that make sense?
When you're trying to separate from one to the other, in what sense do you mean?
Separate from material consciousness to spiritual. Yeah, you're giving up the material consciousness because you're attached to the spiritual. So it just struck
like
me.
A new devotee, you mean?
Sorry?
Like you mean when someone is a new devotee?
No, just a devotee. Because when you're liberated, then you've crossed that. So when you become an Uttamadhikari, then you don't need to use this technique anymore. But before that, it's useful. If it works for you, you use it. If not, then you use what works. If it just works to just engage your activities in Krishna's service, that's good enough. But if in that, it helps to understand that you're not the doer. So if you do that activity for Krishna and don't become proud, you don't need jnana yoga.
Okay.
But if you become proud, then you have to bring in, well, actually, you're not the doer. Krishna's the intelligence, he's that. It just struck me that in the dominical circles, that, you know, how whatever it is you did that, you know, I say, did this and that, no, but you really didn't, you know, care, this and that, and then you have all those emotional things. You could, if you're working on that brahminical thing between couples, they could use all these things as the thing, though. Yeah, no, but I worked so hard, no, but that's the, you know, the mode of the nature, it's like that. You didn't do anything, no, but I, you know, so you have to really prove that you wanted to do it, and then it's okay.
Yes. I was also thinking that a lot of misunderstandings between guru and disciple is that, you know, disciple comes for rasa, for emotional support, but then guru opens up Bhagavad Gita, okay, let's do it, and it's like...
Yeah, it's a real downer. Yeah. But the first time I was heading, I'm taking a flight from India on Aeroflot to the hub. For, I think it was for that, when Goswami Maharaj took sannyas.
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah. So then Burijan Prabhu says, number one rule, do not smile at anybody. Said, just have a poker face all the time. Do not smile. Because exactly this point. Yeah. So kind of that's a big problem up to Poland. And then once you go west from Poland, then that is not as prominent. And then when you go east of Vladivostok, it also stops again. So, yeah, it's somehow just in between, you know, the border of Poland and Germany and Vladivostok. That's where you have the problem. Like that. No, but it's there. It's there, of course, everywhere. But I'm saying it's that. That's why one has to appreciate then what is the guru. The guru is giving that spiritual understanding, and then you know, one tries to be as personal as possible in the process. But it can't be that the relationship then takes on that as its life, that personal aspect. It's you're using the instrument of the personal, but it can't be that it's the personal that is what you're looking for, because that's the secular aspect, like that, and that's not the position. Like, you see, Prabhupada was very pleasant and very nice like that, but it wasn't about that. You couldn't just have a relationship like that with Prabhupada. Because Krishna has to be involved. So as soon as that we want the relationship with the spiritual master without Krishna, then it doesn't work. We'll be disappointed. As long as Krishna is involved, but that means Krishna is involved according to Krishna's definition of his involvement, not ours. Yes.
Does that apply both for Shiksha and Diksha Guru?
Yes. Like that. You'll generally see there's less of a emotional dependence from the Shiksha Guru. Yeah. For Shiksha Guru, generally it's less. Diksha Guru, somehow or another, we think that all the emotions that we haven't gained in this lifetime because of whatever of our social background, the Diksha Guru is going to take care of. But that's not the... It's somehow or another, Hari Bhakta Lass doesn't mention that as one of the definitions of the duties. Like that. Yeah. Nowhere mentions. After 10 minutes. Okay, yeah, we'll be there after 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Yeah. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that. Means if that's there, nice, but it doesn't. That's not the definition. That's why Varnashram is there. So what happens, we try to get everything from the guru and ignore Varnashram. The Varnashram is what fulfills all these desires. Right? But the difficulty is that with Varnashram, you have to work. While with the guru, him fulfilling all the things, he's just supposed to do it because he's the guru. So it's not actually... That's
sounds good.
It sounds good, but that's why we've been missing out all along anyway. Because you have to work. Right? You want material results, you have to put in the effort in the material field. So that's why we put in that effort in the mode of goodness, as instructed by the scriptures. Then we see things work nicely. But that situations, we use that in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? The conclusion of Scripture cannot be that... Okay, again, another doubt. The conclusion of Scripture cannot be that the jiva is the agent, because we see suffering related to the jiva, end quote. Remember before they said he was an agent, he'd do everything beneficial for himself and nothing unbeneficial. So he's saying, because we see suffering, so it can't be he's the agent, end quote. Such bad arguments are refuted by the fact that they would make meaningless instructions for a person to perform darsha, purnamasa, sacrifice. Right?
What?
You don't know from all your natural Vedic upbringing and all that? But,
no.
These would be different things that would be how to remove reactions or bad effects from different things that one's done, or to create auspicious, in other words, how to create auspicious environments for yourself. So that if he's not the agent and he's just suffering something there, then why is it that he's supposed to do, the living entity is supposed to perform the darsha purnamasa sacrifice? Because if material nature is taken care of, then material nature should perform the darsha purnamasa sacrifice. Right? But Maya doesn't have to. She just sits there with Lord Shiva and they talk about Krishna. Right? So we don't ever hear of her having to perform this. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-24. As iron has the power to burn when made red hot in the association of fire, so the body, senses, living force, mind and intelligence, although merely lumps of matter, can function in their activities when infused with a particle of consciousness by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As iron cannot burn unless heated by fire, the bodily senses cannot act unless favored by the Supreme Brahman. Footnote 59. Right, so all these things, the body, the senses, living force, mind, intelligence, they're all dead matter, all of that. So some of them we take with us, some of them we don't. Right? But it's only when they're infused by being, they act as fire when they're in contact with Krishna. So then they act in a spiritual way. Right? So we can't make them spiritual. It's only when they're in contact with Krishna they become spiritual. Otherwise, they're already in contact with us, and they're not becoming spiritual at all. Right? So it's only when they're in contact with Krishna that it takes on that aspect. Srila Prabhupada comments, red-hot iron can burn, but it cannot burn the original fire. Therefore, the consciousness of the small particle of Brahman is fully dependent on the power of the Supreme Brahman. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Mata smritir jnanam apohanam cha. 15:15. From me, the conditioned soul receives memory, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The power for activities comes from the Supreme Lord. And when the Lord withdraws this power, the conditioned soul no longer has energy with which to act through his various senses. The body includes 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, 5 active senses, and the mind. But actually, these are merely lumps of matter. For example, the brain is nothing but matter. But when electrified by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the brain can act, just as iron can burn when made red hot by the influence of fire. The brain can act while we are awake or even while we are dreaming, but when we are fast asleep or unconscious, the brain is inactive. Since the brain is a lump of matter, it does not have independent power with which to act. It can act only when favored by the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Brahman or part of Brahman. This is the way to understand how the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, is present everywhere. Just as the sunshine is present because of the sun god in the sun globe. The Supreme Lord is called Hrishikesha. He is the only conductor of the senses. Unless empowered by his energy, our senses cannot act. In other words, he is the only seer, the only worker, the only listener, and the only active principle or supreme controller. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-24. Right? So, in the beginning, then, this, because of our material conditioning, this kind of knowledge breaks down that. So everything that we have faith in on the material platform then starts to break down because it's not actually what's happening. It's all Krishna. But we see as someone on the transcendental position that we see that for them, then seeing in this way, they just see Krishna. Right? Because when we're dealing with the material energy, we're dealing with Brahman and its transformations of Brahman's energies. So then that aspect, we're just seeing that much. So by clicking into that, it brings it into that generic, so that individuality of the particulars of relationships becomes lessened. Right? But we see is that once one crosses that aspect, then it simply increases the appreciation of Krishna as a person. How he is a person is taking care of all these aspects for us, the living entity. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is this another, we're speaking in Swahili day?
Early one.
Okay. Also, it's just the 2-week gap, so you have 2 weeks worth of stuff all in one day.
Yeah.
Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 555. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subject to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruit of activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruit of activity, he has to accept the material body. Okay, so now one has, inquiring about the spiritual values, then one gives up the material endeavor. And that material endeavor will contaminate one, whether it is pious or impious. Both will be a problem for you. That's why, for us, then the Varnashram system is used only in as much as it's used for Krishna's service. But on its own, we're not interested. So in the same way, just as Varnashram is the best of the Vedic, you know, systems for social, we're also not interested in the best of the non-Vedic. Right? Because it will bind you. Like that. It's about his connection to Krishna. So now, that understanding, you can remember every time you see 555. Yes. Right? Yes.
Sometimes, when we hear devotees do bridge preaching.
Bridge preaching.
When they see that the audience, perhaps, or a particular person that they're speaking to is unable to appreciate, you know, Krishna consciousness directly, they will, just try to situate them a bit more in the mode of goodness in like.
But that's okay. Are you in goodness to do that bridging?
Well, assuming that the devotee is, you know, a Apaka devotee.
Okay. So our business is situating them in goodness. So if that's the thing, why don't we use this bridge for our communities and train everybody in Varnashram? Because that would situate them all in goodness. So since much of the time those bridge preachers are opposed to Varnashram, I would highly doubt that they're actually conscious of situating them in goodness, know what the mode of goodness is, and know how to apply the mode of goodness. Doesn't make sense. The point is that you present Krishna consciousness in vocabulary that they can understand. Therefore, means, in other words, the stuff that we're talking here, but just, you know, using less Sanskrit and all that, you can take this and talk to that particular audience that you're talking about. That's bridge preaching. The other, maybe it's a bridge, but I don't know if it's preaching. Situating someone in goodness, that's not preaching, that's bridge. You know? And bridge does establish. People get together, they have whole communities of people who play bridge, you know. So it's very popular. Yeah, especially like that. So the whole thing is one has to be very, very clear what one's dealing with. Okay, we'll continue after. I have to go. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.